Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Saturday morning here. If you're watching over the webcam, we're getting a little bit of light over there on the eastern horizon as we head into the first week of October here, obviously. I know it's hard to think of Hawaii as having seasons, but we do. We have a rain season. We have a hurricane season. And we're getting out of one and into the other, and it takes a little bit more time for the sun to come up in the morning. But, you know, and of course, the bad thing about the winter season in Hawaii is you don't see quite so many string bikinis on the beach. They sort of go to their winter bikinis, and it's a little less visually interesting. Anyway, getting some business out of the way before we get into the news content for the show, a final reminder that the What Really Happened weekday radio show is in a new time slot. We are now from 5 to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday evening, Central Time. And if you are listening over the streaming feed at Genesis Communication, GCNLive.com, we are moving to Channels 1 and Channel 3. So tune in on Monday. We're going to be starting a whole new series of shows and just a lot more fun and hopefully more of your phone calls. And speaking of phone calls, if you want to join us today for the show, the toll-free number is 1-800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. All right, moving along here, we're going to cover a bunch of different stuff today. I know this whole last week it was all economy and politics, and they're still dominating the news, but we're going to get to some other things today. And even though I'm not really an entertainment news show, I do work in entertainment in my day job, and so I do feel that I need to mention today, I'm sure you've already heard because it's all over the place, but actor Paul Newman passed away from cancer. He was 83 years of age, so you know, you can't really say that he did not have a good run both in life and in his career. And I only ever had one opportunity to meet him during my own career and in real life, you know, when the cameras weren't running. He was every bit the dignified gentleman that he looked like and came across on the screen. And there are a lot of people that, you know, seem really cool on screen, and you meet them in real life, and they turn out to be real unpleasant, is a good word to use here. I have to always think, can I say that with the FCC? And, but no, Paul Newman, he was just amazing. And it was always amazing when he was walking through the lot. I mean, we're on a movie lot where people should be used to seeing movie stars all the time, and still everybody's looking out windows. Ooh, it's Paul Newman. And just, he had that kind of magic about him. And we all loved his movies like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and Absence of Malice. And I think one of the reasons he was so well respected is that he aged both in real life and his career gracefully, that he did not resist playing older roles as he got older. And we've all seen a lot of people working in entertainment, including a certain aging rock star who's over in Israel at the moment, who go on trying to pretend that they're still the person they were in their 20s and 30s, when it's way past time to be playing those kind of roles. And Paul Newman was not like that. As he got older, he played older roles, and he did them very well. I also loved him in Road to Perdition was another good one. Anyway, so Paul Newman, no longer with us. I'm sure his movies will be making the rounds on the local TV channels for the next couple of weeks, which is fine. They're good movies. Go watch them. They're a lot of fun. Now, moving right along, obviously talking about an interesting show, last night we had the first debate between Senator John McCain and Senator Barack Obama. With few exceptions, the after-debate polls are handing the victory to Barack Obama, and it's kind of interesting. We're already hearing a lot of the GOP apologists getting on the air and trying to say, well, what McCain really meant was this, and why Obama said this is he meant that, and they're trying to sort of patch it up. But I think watching McCain's face at the time with the sound turned off, he knew he was not doing as well. He basically just, he comes across as so condescending, and there were times when that smirk on his face was just kind of getting in the way. And you don't get a tremendous sense of warmth, gentlemen. And I realize we're supposed to vote the issues. But we live in a media age, and politics is perception, and very much how you come across on media is going to influence people who don't understand that they need to think about how the elections influence their own personal life, as Richard Nixon found out in his debate with Kennedy. So I understand that Sarah Palin watched the debate from a pub. There's a rumor floating around that every time McCain said, "You just don't understand," or mispronounced Ahmadinejad's name, Sarah Palin had to down a shot of tequila. This is understandable. I had to get a little mellowed myself to sit all the way through the replay and take notes for the radio show today, so more power to you. I'm getting a lot of email from people who are very upset that both McCain and Obama basically follow the official lines about 9/11 and Al-Qaeda and Osama and terrorism and Ahmadinejad saying, "I will wipe Israel off the map," and blah, 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 blah. And I understand why both of them follow the official line, because we know that if the U.S. government ever acknowledged the truth about 9/11 or who Al-Qaeda really is, or how much of the terrorism is false flag attacks, this is a scandal that would bring the whole government down, not just the opponent. And you need to understand, when you're looking at these debates and you're looking at the campaigns, there are two levels of secrets in Washington. There are the secrets that you can safely use to destroy your enemy, like wide stances in restrooms or involvement in the Emperor's Club VIP, because these are secrets that you can use to destroy your opponent or your enemy, but they don't threaten the system as a whole. They're safe secrets. They're safe weapons to use against your opponent. Then there are the really big secrets, like who really killed John F. Kennedy, and who really killed John F. Kennedy Jr., and who really murdered Vince Foster, and who really did 9/11, and who's pretending to be Al-Qaeda. Those are secrets that if the American public had to confront them and acknowledge them directly, would result in the instant delegitimization of the entire government. Now, Barack Obama doesn't want to bring the government down. He wants to run it. And so the political campaigns are fought in the arena of the generally accepted cultural myths. And yes, it does look like they were arguing about the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus last night, but that's where the political campaign is going to be argued about as long as approximately one-third of Americans believe in the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus. Because remember, that debate took place on television, and they're playing to the people who get their political news off of television. If the debates were on the Internet, you would see the debate framed in the knowledge that the Internet users, bloggers, browsers, authors know. There would probably be a little bit more acknowledgement that there are doubts about the official stories of 9/11 and Al-Qaeda. So both politicians, they're professional politicians, and they're both very good at it, and they're playing to the audience. And, yeah, it angers me that Barack Obama is not going to stand up for the truth. But I understand he doesn't want to do it because he's still part of the system. The system works for him. He's a senator, soon to be president. Why is he going to mess around with that? Those of us on the outside, I'm not invested in the laws. I'm not running for office. I'm not asking for campaign donations. I'm not asking for your votes. I am a critic. I seek to do the good that I want to do by keeping government honest and say, look, you can't get away with these kind of lies anymore. You've got to be honest and forthright. And after Obama becomes president, which barring a tragic unforeseen accident, looks like he's going to be the next president, once he's in office, you know, I'm going to be holding his feet to the fire every step of the way. And I catch him in a lie, and I'm going to make his time in office a living heck. So, I'm getting so many emails from people saying, I can't stand to hear them both going on about all these things, because I know it's not true. You're right. It isn't true. They're playing to that audience that still believes the official lies. That's how politics works in the United States. We're going to take a break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 1-800-259-9231. Pick up that phone, push the buttons, call in and rant. We'll be right back.
K Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Fear and hate will rule them, said the demon to his robe. In shackles we will bind them, to the terror they'll be shown. As mindless slaves they will not think, blind eyes they will not see. They'll jail themselves and call the bars Homeland Security.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We've got a caller on the line. We're going to go to Tom in Mississippi or Missouri. I'm not sure which
Missouri.
One that is. Missouri. Well, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Okay, I just want to have to say that no matter what goes on, as long as either one of the potential presidents, it's scripted. Air Force 2025, you can look on any search engine, and you can see what the actual plan is for our country right now. And only if we have a rebellious president that's going against the grain, which I think both of them have the potential of doing, maybe more so with candidate A, I better not say who, but whenever he had Sarah Palin in there, I believe that whenever she finally realizes what McCain means by being naive, she may be going against the grain and exposing quite a bit.
Okay, I would tend not to agree with you, to put it very delicately. As far as rebellious presidents, of course, the last one we had was John F. Kennedy, and there was an object lesson made out of him. I see Barack Obama as more likely to break with at least the traditions and pressures of the last 8 years. No, he's not going to do anything to really upset the core of the government itself, as I mentioned last segment. But Sarah Palin is not somebody who's going to show any kind of independence. She's just, you know, she's a party girl who got lucky.
Right.
And the word that's often applied to her is a post turtle. You know, you drive along and you see the turtle up on the post and you know they didn't get there themselves. Somebody put them up there and they have no clue what they're going to do or how they're going to get down. And that's pretty much exactly, you know, what it is. I mean, for her to be at a pub watching the debate.
Right.
You know, and hoisting a few during the whole thing. I mean, that's not a serious student of politics. She should have been watching intently, taking notes and studying because her own debate is coming up very soon. And my understanding is that the practice debates that they've had for her so far have both been utter disasters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll basically set up a simulated debate and they have somebody playing Biden, somebody playing moderator, and they rehearse it, they practice it. And in both cases, she just came across as totally clueless. And
right.
I know that one of the reasons McCain wanted to delay last night's presidential debate is that he wanted to put it on top of the date when the vice president's debate would be taking place and put that one off possibly into December. So, you know, that's what's going with that one. But, you know, every 4 years, we get to pick the lesser of two evils, and it's a darn stupid way to run a country because you're still getting evil all the time. And as Jesse Ventura, we need a none of the above on the ballot, and it needs to be binding. If
Amen,
none of the
brother.
Above wins, the office sits empty, you know, while the parties go back out. You know, it's kind of interesting looking back at the Emmys last week. I didn't report on them all that much because well, the show I work on didn't win any. So, but the John Adams miniseries that HBO did, and I loved it, loved it, loved it. See it, buy the DVD. It was just a wonderful view of the early history of this country. And John Adams, it's not actually in the show, but one of the things John Adams once said is that the United States will never fall to an external enemy. It will be destroyed from within by political parties, because political parties always do what's best for the party, not what's best for the nation. And we are definitely seeing that right now, especially with the last 8 years.
Okay.
I keep cutting you off, and I shouldn't do that. And especially the way they're handling this whole bailout crisis. So, Tom, your opinion.
Okay, now... Okay, I understand. It's your show, so you cut me off as many times as you need to. But
no, that's rude of me, and I apologize. I shouldn't have done that.
Under the Air Force 2025, there's a plausible history. They did this in 96. The Mexican recession and immigration wave was both a sore cost in 2002. The F-22 was canceled 2005. And then it says recession begins 2009, the presidential election politics in 2012, the national debt will go up, and stock will crash in 2013, depression begins. This is all scripted by the banks, and this is just part of the process of them milking our economy, and we have to do something, and I suggest getting on our knees praying right off the bat.
Well, I'm looking at some of these pages that you mentioned, and a lot of people are able to forecast, and we've been making predictions here at What Really Happened pretty much along the same line. And that's kind of what's so frustrating about watching this whole bailout situation. We've known this has been coming for years. We saw the trends. I mean, just in the last couple of years, when, you know, the government is borrowing more money for these wars, and at the same time they're helping corporations to ship jobs overseas to lower the wage of the working people, and then they wonder why all of a sudden the credit card and mortgage payments aren't being made. You have to wonder, are the windows in their ivory towers welded shut that they don't see the potential consequences of their actions beyond their own immediate wallets? And I think that really ultimately is the end of it. We've got a government that's full of very self-centered people. Every choice they made is based on how is this going to make me richer. And they're not really looking at the wider consequences. The rest of us, we're living out here in the real world. We've lived our entire lives in the real world. We have an instinctive feel for how the real world operates that our political elites lack. They're literally blind to it. And I think it's a crippling situation. And I think one of the reasons why the United States worked so well when it was first started is the government was made up out of people who had, you know, basically they were mostly working class. You know, and they were upper working class, but, you know, Paul Revere was a silversmith, and John Hancock was an insurance salesman, and Ben Franklin ran a publishing operation, and a few other things as well. They weren't people with inherited wealth, with vast fortunes and trust accounts that allowed them to play at being political leaders. You know, if you're going to be the leader of a country, you've got to live the life that your countrymen are living, or you're really not going to be very plugged in to what their needs and concerns are. And the problem with focus groups is there's always going to be bias, because the people who pull the focus groups together instinctively, unconsciously, are picking up people that they sort of get a vibe from will produce the answers and points of view that they desire. And it's one of the reasons why focus grouping has lost some of its luster in recent years. It's not seen as effective a predictor of popular opinion as once it was. It's a trend, and it's had its day, and it's kind of fading away.
And one more point now, let you go on with your show. I wonder if Paul Revere, whenever he was screaming and hollering about the British were coming, I wonder how many people laughed at him.
Well, when they did, he'd say, "Can I sell you some silverware?" All right. There were. You know, the American Revolution was actually fought with only one-third of popular support. And after it was all over, everybody started waving flags and saying, "Heck yes, this is a good idea. My taxes just went down." All right. Tom, thank you very much for the call.
Okay, call in again.
And don't forget to tune into the new show starting Monday at 5 p.m. Central. We're going to take another break here. Phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Call in and rant. We got lots of time and lots of stuff to talk about today. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here today, and if you look through the webcam, sun's coming up. Looks like it's going to be a really, really gorgeous day, and after the show here, I'm going to grab my lady love, and we're going to go out and have some fun, because it's been a long, long week, and it looks like next week is going to be equally interesting. I'm getting a lot of listener emails right now. I'm going to take a moment to respond to a couple of them. Let's see, the Drudge debate poll is BS, and they're absolutely right. Virtually every other poll, including the one we ran at whatreallyhappened.com, shows Obama with a commanding lead coming out of last night's debate. And by the way, we have a new term of craft here at the What Really Happened radio show. There is a word people like to use, referring to the waste products of certain bovine creatures. And we can't say that on the air. Even George Carlin got arrested for saying that on the air, and the FCC is very strict about these things. So we've decided we're going to substitute the word moose pucky for that other word, because that word is legal to use on the radio, and we have decided it represents not only total lies but utter cluelessness being fed to us by our political elites. So that's our new term of craft here. Another letter, there are reports that there are Lego-style prison cells being prepared. Have you seen the picture? They do not look like friendly cages. There's no reason for these. They're not cost-effective. What gives your take? Yes, I've seen the picture of them. They're these half-concrete prefabricated prison cell blocks, and the idea is they can be trucked into an area and just put down on the ground, and they slide together. That's hence the name Lego, and they can be used to build temporary holding cell facilities of any size, and it's all a prefab thing. No, they're not friendly cages. No cage is friendly, is the bottom line. There's no such thing as a friendly cage. It doesn't matter how gilded or plush or cushiony or benign or anything the cage is, it's not friendly. Just accept that one right at the front. And there is no reason for these. Yeah, there is a reason. Obviously, I mean, we're seeing next week the United States government is bringing back soldiers from Iraq who have just come back from a year of shooting anything that moves, and they're going to start patrolling the streets of America to deal with national emergencies. Somehow, I don't see these guys putting sand in sandbags to deal with floods, or we would have seen them home by now to deal with all the destruction. They are going to be here patrolling the streets of America to deter the potential for violent uprising as we head into a contentious election season and a potential severe economic crash. Okay? Folks, it is time to face facts. The U.S. government is preparing and using your tax dollars to prepare to do violence to you to keep you in line. They've built this little portable microwave oven on a car, on a Humvee, big antenna up on top, and they drive it around, and they just point this thing at you, and your skin starts to burn. It's a crowd control device. It's like a cattle prod, only much larger and much more expensive, and you got to pay for it. Now, that's got to be a little bit annoying, you know, to be just, you know, to have this little torture device, because that's what it is. They point it at you, and they torture you to make you run away. And you paid for it. Ooh, cool. What a wonderful... Is this one of the freedoms the terrorists hate us for? So, the U.S. government is getting ready to do violence against us, and you're going to have to deal with that, because when a government starts using violence against everybody in an area, it's going to hit people whether they support the government or are opposed to the government. It's like that old saying they had back during the Unholy Crusades, kill them all, God will sort them out. And when you get into a tyrannical dictatorship minority, a tyrannical dictatorship mentality. That's the point of view. Flog them all. The good and the bad will go in the same direction, and that's good enough for us. And we're kind of getting there. I mean, the U.S. government knows the American people don't believe anything they say anymore, especially after Saddam's nuclear bombs. The U.S. government knows that whatever happens to the economy, the American people are going to blame the government for it, because the government, you know, helped corporations ship our jobs overseas and then stands there scratching their head wondering why all of a sudden we're not able to make our mortgage and credit card payments. I mean, the government has created this whole huge mess, first of all by lying to us, second of all by just caving into their greedy donors and not really paying attention to what the American people want, because they didn't think they had to because of the election systems are all rigged at the higher levels of our elective offices. And now we're in this crisis situation. They don't know how to fix it except come out and take more money away from the American people. And they understand, finally, that the American people have reached the point where we don't have it to give anymore. And so somewhere down the road, there's a national emergency coming on, and the president will regretfully be taking emergency measures. And they know we're not going to like it, and that's why they're building these prefabricated, drive them in, set them up, holding cells for people who resist, while they're building these very expensive little Hummers with the ray guns on top to zap people. They're getting ready to use violence against you. And, you know, you got to decide what you're going to do about that. And you got to get ready to deal with that. And I know people who've been saying this for years and making preparations are treated by the corporate media as lunatics and nutcases, but then that's the job of the corporate media, to keep the population docile, complacent. The government loves you. The government would never hurt you. We're going to go to the phones. Mike in Georgia. Mike, aloha. What's on your mind?
Are you familiar with Norman D. Livergood? He's got a thing up on the web that's called The Second American Revolution.
I haven't seen his, but I'm seeing so many similar type items. There was this short video I just put up on my website, very well done short film, basically dealing with that very topic. But what does Mr. Livergood say?
I'd like to read a paragraph to you. George Washington was the richest man in America, a man who enslaved 216 human beings who were not emancipated until he and his wife both died. Benjamin Franklin had a personal fortune worth at least $20 million in today's money. He was a champion of the Quaker plutocrats in Philadelphia and vigorously opposed the Democratic Western farmers of Pennsylvania. And then it goes on to talk about John Hancock being a military contractor and how he was a rich Bostonian. And it talks about Hancock and his merciless devaluation of the
currency. Okay, what's the point of all this?
Well, you were pointing to Franklin as, you know, just being a silversmith or something. But when they said
that was Paul Revere that was a silversmith.
Oh, okay, I stand correct. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, Ben Franklin, he was a publisher. He ran, he printed Poor Richard's Almanac, which was a very popular magazine. And he was an inventor. He invented the Franklin stove. He invented bifocal glasses. And so, yeah, when you're clever and you come up with things like that, you're going to make money. And the whole point of the United States when the Founding Fathers set it up was that if you had brains and smarts and were willing to work, you could become rich. That's the original goal of capitalism. The way it's mutated now is we have people, you know, like at the Federal Reserve Bank, who have so set things up that ordinary Americans, no matter how creative they are and how hard they work, they can't get ahead. That's where the country kind of went wrong, and that's why I think we're headed toward a revolution. These people who came to the United States and became rich were people who couldn't become rich in Europe, because Europe had gone the same way. The nobility and the privileged inherited wealth class owned everything, and no matter how hard you worked or what you did, you couldn't advance your own life. So these people came to the early United States. It was called the brain drain. And they came to the United States, and all of a sudden, when they invented something like bifocal glasses, they got to keep the profits from it. And that's what made America a wonderful, powerful nation when it was first started out. Now, as far as George Washington being rich, he ran a distillery. He was a businessman.
He was an aristocrat.
not in and of himself, no.
Oh, yes.
Well, anyway, we've got to take a commercial break here, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I want to go back and respond just a real quick note on that last phone call, Mike from Georgia. I hope I have not given people the idea that I'm somehow opposed to people becoming rich. I think people should be rich. I think money's a very, very good thing. I think people who work hard and have good ideas and are want to work toward it should be allowed to become rich. What I'm opposed to is an entire population of people working as hard as they can where the money is taken from them under color of law and handed to cronies and various other people like that. I don't have a problem with the founding fathers of the United States being rich because they were rich by their own hands. And in regard to the idea that George Washington was an aristocrat, I would remind Mike in Georgia of Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8 of the Constitution of the United States of America, which makes it illegal for anybody holding a title of nobility from serving in the U.S. government. Certainly that would apply to the presidency of the United States. And I would also remind Mike that it was George Washington himself who forbade the Congress from creating any fluffy titles for the presidency, like your excellency or your honorariousness or whatever it was. In fact, that's actually in the John Adams HBO special about how originally Congress, which all figured they were all going to get a turn at the presidency, they wanted a big puffy title, and they said, no, it's just Mr. President is sufficient. That's all we really need. And, after having lived under British rule for such a very long time, the new American nation really was kind of tired about this idea of an aristocracy, and it was very politically unpopular, and people maintaining pretensions to aristocracy were dealt with rather harshly. Okay, moving on back to our current news. Again, I'm watching the media feed coming into the studio here. And GOP commentators, supporters, McCain's campaign people are coming on kind of trying to salvage the platform after the debate last night. Earlier today I was listening in, and they're still trying to make the claim that the tax cuts for the wealthy that George Bush put in and is trying to make permanent lead to greater employment. And it's rather amazing for them to be continuing to make that claim as unemployment in this country has hit, I think it's like almost a 20-year high right now. And I'm sorry, tax cuts for the rich, it doesn't really work. We've had this nonsense fed to us since the trickle-down economic days of Reagan. And I'm tired of being trickled on, and I'm sure so are you. Because the reality is that the only thing that's trickling down, especially right now this week, are the toxic assets that, you know, they can't make money on anymore, so they're going to dump them on us and keep the goodies for themselves. We just saw that with Washington Mutual, where J.P. Morgan is coming in and buying all the really good assets, and then all the bad assets are going to be sent to the bailout plan, where our money, our tax money, is going to be spent to take them off the hands of the investment banks. Now, for those of you who've grown up in farming country and you know about threshing wheat and, you know, having the chaff blow off so that you can keep the grain of the wheat to make your bread with and your flour with and everything, that's basically what this bailout plan is. It's a huge winnowing operation where the grain of the economic wheat is going to be saved to make bread and the chaff is getting dumped back on the rest of us. And that's really what's going on behind this bailout. We're being told that somehow down the road, these toxic assets will make a profit. If that was true, they'd be keeping them. They wouldn't be getting rid of them. The reality is most of these so-called toxic assets are toxic because while these homes and buildings are staying empty that have been foreclosed, they are deteriorating. They are not being maintained. Property taxes aren't being paid on them. The banks that have foreclosed on these houses are not paying property tax on these properties. So the community revenue stream is drying up at the same time. And they want to dump all of this on the taxpayers. And down the road, these assets are, you know, it's going to be a plot of land covered with weeds and the ruins of an old house that has to be condemned and torn down, probably, again, at taxpayer expense. So they're out here with this trickle-down stuff. And, you know, they're screaming that if capital gains taxes go back up to where they were when Bush came into office, it's going to slow down investment in Wall Street. Well, maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe if Wall Street wasn't such a freewheeling runaway casino that we'd get rid of the speculators and game players, they'd go back out to Las Vegas, where they belong. And Wall Street would go back to being just a place where you invest in a company that's manufacturing products and creating jobs for a dividend return months or years in the future instead of what you can sell the stock for next week. Now, one of the things I admire about the Japanese, they have, or at least had, they're starting, unfortunately, to get into the same kind of game playing that wrecked Wall Street. But back in the 90s, the Japanese had a very mature attitude toward investment. When they invested in a company, they would not even expect a return for 5 years because they knew it, to develop a good quality product, it takes a five-year development cycle. You start with the idea, you get funded. It takes 5 years to do research and development, set up the manufacturing, get it going, get your marketing, get into the stores, and only then do you get a return on your investment. And because of that mentality, Japan produced high-quality products that everybody around the world wants, including yours truly, especially Sony and Canon. I love them. Absolutely, absolutely love them. In contrast, American investors, they want a return within a couple of months. And so as a result, a lot of fly-by-night, get-rich-quick junk schemes get funded, and a lot of more serious inventions, things that could really help humanity, do not. And I think maybe raising the capital gains taxes on the get-rich-quick schemes is probably a good idea because, you know, taxes are used for two purposes. One, to raise revenue for the government to operate on, which I think pretty much everybody agrees, you know, that's a necessary function. That has to be done. But taxes, unfortunately, in the United States are also used to shape public behavior. And if you're going to do that, if you're going to tax behavior that is seen as destructive of society, such as alcohol consumption and smoking, then you ought to tax behavior that is destructive of the economy. And runaway speculation definitely falls into that category. So, you know, it's a complicated issue, but GOP is basically, McCain is pushing the same policies you've had for the last 8 years. Look around you. Is it working for you? Probably not. It's working really good for the people who got those tax cuts, for the people who own more homes than they can remember, for the people who have 6, 8, 10 cars and 2 yachts and 5 corporate jets. It's working great for them. With their $20 million severance packages after only 3 weeks of work, wow, they're going to support the system. They're going to believe in it. They're going to fund it. They're making out like bandits, literally. But for the vast majority of 300 million Americans, take a look around you, talk to your friends and neighbors, look at those vacancies in the retail sector, all the empty storefronts in the local shopping malls. Look at the gas lines queuing up in front of you. Is the current government policy working for you? Well, if it isn't, that's what you've got to vote on come November. Anyway. Let's see, taking a look down here. Protests are starting to appear outside the White House and outside Wall Street. And I am so proud of these Americans for getting out there and being visible. And I know it's very hard to be enthusiastic about protests because we've been protesting for 8 years against the Iraq War, against Afghanistan, against whatever. The government doesn't pay attention. And the reason they don't is because the elections are rigged. You know, when they look out the window and they see a few hundred people, they say, I don't care how they're going to vote because it doesn't matter because Diebold is going to guarantee the results when we go into that next election. But, you know, if you get 1 million people marching into Washington, D.C., and Bush and his neocons look out their windows and they see that 1 million people, they're going to be thinking back to that time in Romania when Ceausescu looked at the millions of people around his palace and said, oh, those are only protesters. And it wasn't. It was an army of revolution. And so it is still valid for a million people to walk into Washington, D.C. and glare at the people who have caused this economic disaster. This brings us to the end of the first hour of our show. We're going to take a break for news and commercials. I'm going to go get some more coffee, and we're going to be back with hour two of our show. So stick around. We'll be right back. Aloha, America. And aloha, America. Welcome to hour two of our show today, and special aloha to all those people just joining us for hour two on our various ground affiliates hither and yon across the United States. And a reminder to those of you just joining our show that starting on Monday, that's just 2 days away, our weekday show is moving to 5 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. If you're listening on the GCN streams, it'll be on channels 1 and 3. We're also going up over the StarGuide satellites, so if you happen to be owning a radio station and would like to carry this show, just call Nick over at GCN. He's the affiliates manager, and he will very pleasantly set things up for you. Now, before we get back into the news here, I'm going to share a little personal story with you, and it's going to seem very, very trivial, but bear with me for just a minute. During the break and during the news, I'm sitting here, and if you're watching on the webcam, I'm wearing one of our What Really Happened t-shirts and a pair of shorts. This is, after all, Hawaii. And the button just came off the front of my shorts. And no, this is not turning into a pornographic thing or anything like that. The shorts are basically, they're 2 weeks old. And they're from a local large chain store. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is I picked the button up off the floor figuring, okay, get a needle and thread and fix it. And I noticed that the thread did not break. What has broken is the button itself. The little middle part that the thread loops over to hold the button in place has literally torn out of this button. And I bring this up only because when a country, when an industry, when an economy cannot even make the simplest things with any kind of durability, I think that's a sign of just how rotted the economy has become. You know, we all see the big failures like, you know, Challenger and Columbia and the bridge collapsing and whatnot. But when the littlest, simplest things that you use in your life are not holding up and they're not durable, it means that too many corners have been cut in the quest for profits. And, you know, I do see this as kind of a major, major warning sign. And yeah, it's no big deal. I go buy a new button and put it on and everything will be fine. But it just amazes me that our country has declined so much that our department stores are selling products that shabby and that flimsy. You know, how can you not make a button that at least holds the thread? I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. Now, again, speaking of the T-shirts, I've been walking around this T-shirt that I have that says, I survived the Bush economy and all I have left is this lousy T-shirt has become one of our most popular designs. This TV show that I work on during the daytime, one of the stars of it just came up and said, ooh, I want one. So I'm going to get her one of the T-shirts and everything. And I was walking around the mall the other day, and people kept coming up and laughing. They know what's going on with the whole thing. And I was, making my jokes about, you know, just remember, guillotines are eco-friendly. And one of the people said, you know, so is stoning. And it's a lot easier to get the necessary tools. And they're joking, we're all joking, but we're looking at each other like, you know, how far can we push this? And I there's a general sense we're reaching a crisis point. You know, when we're openly talking about guillotines and stoning our political leadership, you know, in the middle of a shopping mall, it really tells you we're kind of heading into that kind of a situation. All right, we're continuing to hear more about the debate last night. Again, most online polls and even most of the corporate media polls are showing Obama won handily. There are a few polls, such as that on the Drudge Report, which are trying to basically spin it that McCain came out ahead. Nobody knows why. Just take our word for it that he absolutely did. We're continuing to see this push of the economic policies of the last 8 years as somehow able to reverse the very damage that we have seen from those last 8 years. And it really is kind of, it's buying the same lemon all over again. And they're saying, trust us, it'll work out in the long run, and it basically won't. I just got a story put up on the What Really Happened website about more of these speeches we're seeing coming out of the House of Representatives. And opposition to the bailout continues to grow, certainly out in Main Street. We're seeing protests in front of the White House. We're seeing protests in Wall Street, literally carrying pitchforks and torches. Now, it's symbolic at this point, but it does indicate the mood of the American people right now. For those of you who were not catching the Friday show, I want to recap kind of where we are on the bailout deal. Paulson's original bailout deal is very simple. We're going to take $700 billion from the American people, and by the way, even Paulson's supporters are saying that number was just picked out of the thin air. They were going to say originally $1 trillion. They just wanted to have a really big number to cover all possible sins down the road. But they don't really know what the ultimate purchase price of all these toxic assets are going to be, especially with Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke going around saying that the government should buy these toxic assets not at their current market worth, but at what the investment houses think they might potentially be worth down the road. This is a strategy called mark to market, which was the strategy which allowed Enron to run so completely out of control, much to the ruination of its employees and investors and the Californians. So Bernanke wants to do the same thing with the toxic assets lining up to avail themselves of this bailout program. So we really don't know if $700 billion is going to cover it. There are people within the General Accounting Office who are convinced that the total worth of the toxic assets now held by the Wall Street investment banks and by foreign banks who are lining up to also get their turn at the taxpayer teat is probably going to run something along $5 trillion. And, you know, that $1 trillion, it's almost more money than you can really imagine unless you live on Wall Street. And, you know, a trillion here and a trillion there, and soon you're going to be talking about some real money there, people. So the Paulson plan is we're going to take $700 billion to start from the American taxpayer. We're going to buy these assets, which are completely worthless, and we're going to warehouse them on the taxpayer's dime on the promise that somewhere down the road they might be worth something, and we'll sell it and we'll make some money back. And this plan is put forward without any oversight whatsoever. There is a clause in the Paulson plan that the steps he's planning to take with all of this money cannot be reviewed by any government agency, cannot be challenged in a court of law. I am not even sure that that is constitutionally valid. I don't think it'll survive a constitutional challenge if it's taken to the United States Supreme Court, even with the ultra-conservative bench that we have right now. But setting that aside, basically it's a license to loot the Treasury. They're going to run off with all the money. They're going to just give it to whoever they decide to give it to. We're not supposed to ask any questions. We're supposed to trust them because, after all, they're so much smarter than we are. And as McCain kept trying to say to Obama last night, you just don't understand how this works. So you have to go along with what we're doing because you just don't understand. You are all so dumb and stupid about economic policy. You know, you're not smart like us who created this mess in the first place, so you're just going to have to trust us that we know best how to fix it. That, in a nutshell, is kind of the Paulson plan. Well, during the debate over the last few days, and it was kind of funny watching the Dow go up and down and up and down based on whether they thought the deal was going to go through or not. I remember the good old days when the Dow industrial averages would go up or down based on whether they thought the companies that they had invested in were going to do well or not. That apparently is not a factor anymore. The Dow is going up and down based on how close they are, they feel we are, to this bailout plan, which is going to open the sluices of American taxpayer money to pour onto the Wall Street casino so they can go back for another spin at the wheel. And in the midst of all this, though, a second plan emerged in the House of Representatives. Now, understand that the people in Congress, we're actually coming to the bottom of the hour here, so I'm going to take a break here because I want to make a point. So we're going to stop for some commercials. And again, if you'd like to call in and give me your point of view, the number is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. I know you're out there listening. The little server dials are flicking all over the place. So I know you're out there listening. Take a chance. Call in. Get your point of view across on the air as well. We're going to stop here for some commercials, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
He's scared, he's lonely, and he knows he screws up everything in life. But I guess that's the way it goes when you're the Antichrist. He's aroused by all things evil. That's why he wants more war. When he gets to the other side, maybe he'll wonder what it's all been for. He's George W. Bush.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And, boy, just think, only a couple more months and that song goes out of the rotation. I wonder what we'll put in its place. Meanwhile, getting back to the story about the bailout and the reason the deal did not actually happen, as so many people anticipated, you need to understand that there are a lot of members of Congress, especially in the Senate, who are very rich, and they're invested in these brokerage houses and hedge funds and all of these other things. That's where their money is. They are going to vote their wallet, and as we mentioned in the first hour of the show, they are oblivious to what their actions are going to cause for ordinary Americans out there. Remember, this is the government that taxes and borrows to pay for these wars. At the same time, they're giving huge corporate tax breaks that make it easier for corporations to ship high-paying jobs overseas. Now, unless we want to take the position that the U.S. government was deliberately trying to crash the economy, and I know there's a lot of people of that opinion, then what we're seeing here is incredible stupidity and boneheadedness in that they didn't make the connection between a nation that is living on debt, which is the way the Federal Reserve Bank operates, by definition. It's a debt-based system. And then they're taking away the high-paying jobs, and there's a conflict. In fact, I want to address one of the talking points that we're seeing go on and about when they argue about mortgage protection, is we're seeing a lot of the GOP defenders saying, well, you know, nobody made those people buy those expensive homes, you know, like it's all their fault. And there's another story about how in Nebraska, because of this new ill-considered law that went through, financially distressed parents are starting to dump their kids on the local hospitals and say, here, you take care of them. And, you know, the response I got to that when I posted the story was, well, you know, they shouldn't have had those children if they couldn't afford to have them. And, folks, I mean, let's just take a look at where our nation has been over these last several years, because at the time these Americans bought these homes, and at the time they were having the children, they could afford them. People, you know, and the mortgage lender said, how much are you making? And the applicant for the loan said, I am making so many thousands of dollars per year. And the mortgage company said, well, yes, you can afford to make the payments on the mortgage. And so they did the mortgage, or they had the kids, and they were not making irresponsible choices. They knew how much money they were making. They agreed to undertake a debt that was within their ability to pay at that time. That was the way it was supposed to work. The irresponsible decision was made by the United States government, which, in order to please their corporate campaign donors, wrote the laws to give huge tax breaks to corporations to make it easier and financially desirable to move high-paying American manufacturing jobs to foreign countries. And then all of a sudden, all of these Americans who had committed to these mortgages or had children, all of a sudden their jobs are gone. They're having to take lower-paying jobs just to survive. and they start to fall behind on their credit card payments. They fall behind on the mortgage payments. They fall behind on their tax payments. That's the root cause of the crisis. Everything would have gone on just fine as long as Americans were allowed to have jobs that allow them to pay the mortgage payments and the tax payments and the credit card payments. Why aren't those jobs there anymore? Because the same corporations now screaming for a bailout and government intervention took the jobs away. They forgot a basic rule of life that every economy in the world in history rests on the working class people making products for sale. So, anyway, I know we've got callers on the line. We're going to get to them maybe next segment because I want to finish the thought about the two competing plans in for the bailout. There's the Paulson plan on one side, which is $700 billion, no strings attached. We can spend it any way we want. You're not allowed to look at it. We don't even have to report to Congress what we're doing until after the elections are over. That's one plan. Then there's the other plan. And this is the plan that is coming from that portion of Congress, which are not incredibly wealthy people. And they're looking at the November 4th elections, and they are very scared about keeping their jobs. And so they're trying to do what's going to work for Main Street. And so their version of the plan is, yeah, give the Wall Street the bailout money, the $700 billion, however much they're asking, but it's a loan. And somewhere down the road, Wall Street has got to give it back. We're not going to stick the taxpayer with that. And along the way, you know, we have got to get some of these excessive executive compensation packages a little bit more under control so that maybe these CEOs and executives, if they're living the same life, you know, maybe only slightly elevated over their workers, they're going to be a little bit more in tune with the realities of life in America and how their actions on Wall Street are going to influence them. And, of course, there's got to be some regulation, especially in the derivatives and hedge funds market, to prevent these derivatives on derivatives on derivatives, which are the big threat hanging over the whole mess right now. So those are the two plans. And obviously, the people who've got a lot of their own money in these investment banks, they want the Paulson plan, and everybody else wants the other plan, and that's the irresistible force and the immovable object, and I don't think they're going to reach a deal. And I don't think in the long run it's going to change anything anyway, because all this bailout plan is one final looting of the public treasury to give to the cronies, and it's not going to change the ultimate outcome, because with the bailout, it's a recession. Without the bailout, it's a depression. It's going to be bad either way. So what the American people need to be thinking about is keeping as much of their own money in their own hands as possible right now. You know, everyone's screaming liquidity. Well, you have to keep your liquidity intact as well. You got to think survival. The government's not looking out for you. They're looking out for their own bank accounts and their own stock portfolios. You have to look out for you. You've got to vote your wallets. You've got to think survival. We're going to go to one of the phone calls right now for just a minute. We'll take them into the next break. Dave in California. Aloha, Dave. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Michael. Your honorariumableness. I love that. I love that word you came up with.
Oh, my goodness, my goodness. Well, I'm sorry, that's unconstitutional. I can't accept that.
Can I mention something about banks for a moment?
You can. We're going to take you into the next segment, though, because we're at the end of this one, and I just wanted to respond to a listener email who said that it was John Adams who wanted to add the title to the presidency, and that's correct. It was George Washington who opposed that. So, Dave, stay on the phone. And we're going to take a break for some commercials here. We're going to come back and we're going to badmouth those mean old banks. And, of course, I'm joking. Banks can and do serve a good purpose within any economy. But when they get out of control, you get into some destabilizing influences. And that's where we are right now. So, Dave, hang on the line. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show, and a special aloha to the listeners at KROC AM 1340 in Minnesota. I understand that they're tuning into the show these days. So aloha, pick up the phone, give us a call. Meanwhile, we're going to get back to Dave in California. And Dave, you had a comment about the banks.
Yeah, well, I find it ironic that the ultra-rich and the bankers and those types of folks are saying that, you know, they shouldn't have, you know, if people are broke now, they shouldn't have had so many children, when the whole system is designed to help them get rich legally. I mean, whoever it was that originally thought up the idea of the banks was a genius. I mean, it's like, hey, let's get people to put their money in our bank, charge them a little bit to do it, then we can turn around and loan it out. Is it like 900% or something on every dollar they get? Or I don't know exact math.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. I mean, originally banks were just that. People would deposit money in there, and then in that capital pool, they would loan money out for various businesses. Then where it really got out of control was the fractional banking system, where the bank could pretend to have $10 for every $1 they actually took in as a deposit. And that's where the whole Federal Reserve fiat monetary system came in. When the United States was created, the dollar was actually a weight measure of silver, and it had a fixed value, and it didn't matter what the government did, that value was always the same. But once you got the Federal Reserve, and they could just print up the money at will, you know, the dollar started devaluing, and, you know, they print up the money for pennies and loan it out at full face value, and they get it back plus interest at full value. It's a gigantic legalized counterfeiting scheme. And it benefits the Federal Reserve. It benefits the banks that borrow from them, because if you can borrow your money at low cost from the Federal Reserve, you don't need to worry about depositors all that much anymore. And it certainly benefited the government that voted it into existence, because they no longer had to live within their means. If they ran out of tax revenues, they could just go borrow from the Federal Reserve and let somebody else down the road worry about paying it back. Well, we're down the road. Actually, we're up the creek. But that's the situation that we're in.
Yeah, we're up a particular creek. It's not a good one.
Yeah, without the paddle.
Yeah, and holes in the boat. But I'm totally with you on that, Michael. I'm just thinking of how ironic it is that people who can create money out of nothing, charge you for the money they've created, you know, loan it out 10 times or, you know, whatever, the fractional reserve banking thing, and, you know, buy congressmen and senators to do exactly what they say, give themselves tax breaks and tax shelters.
Oh, they don't buy congressmen and senators. They don't buy congressmen and senators. It's too expensive. They just rent them moment to moment.
Rent them for a few minutes to sign a bill, you know, whatever. But anyway, point being, you know, these people must be the worst businessmen in the world. On the one hand, they're all getting rich, but their businesses are going belly up. You know, all the banks where all this fake money is supposedly stored are all dying. I mean, if somebody gave me a deal like that, here, we're going to give you a bunch of money, you can loan it all out, you can buy people up, you can do whatever you want, we'll give you all these tax breaks and stuff, and you're going to drive your business into the ground. I mean, what kind of business is that?
Well, it's a gambling business, you know, and again, we get back to this idea that the United States wandered away from making products to make money with and got into this idea where the money was now the product. You know, it wasn't that long ago when 23% of our economy was involved in manufacturing. Now it's down to 11%. We've lost more than half of our manufacturing. At the same time, the financial industries went from 10% of the economy to 20% of the economy. Well, when your ability to actually earn money is cut in half, and the people who are playing around with that money that's coming in double, you know, they start scrambling around. It's like musical chairs. The chairs are vanishing and the music stops and people start scrambling. And they kept inventing new economic products. And where it got into the derivatives on the derivatives on the derivatives is where it really got out of control. And I understand why everybody in Washington agrees that some form of bailout is necessary, because if any more of the banks and mortgage houses start to fail, then the derivatives in the hedge funds start to kick in, and that's when it's really going to cascade out of control, like you will not believe. And it's really, we may be too far painted in the corner to get out. And personally, I'm of the opinion, you know, whatever solution they come up with is going to be bad for the American people. It really is. There is no magic overnight fix. It took 30, 40 years to get into this mess. It's going to take 30 or 40 to get out. I am really of the opinion that the United States government and its current economic system has lived its lifespan. It's, you know, been around for 100 years. It's time to kind of let it go, like the way the old USSR did. And if you look at what happened in the Russian republics, yeah, there was a little bit of confusion after the old system failed. Then they started right up. And now, I mean, 3 years after the Russian republics were formed, they'd paid off all their debts. They've got to be doing something right. And maybe it's time for the U.S. government and its $14 to $40 trillion debt, depending upon who you ask and whose books you trust, maybe it's time for them to go away. And it's time for us to start a whole new country with zero balance on the books and just pick up and move forward from there. You know, and I'm not advocating violence, but I'm looking for a solution out of this mess that works for the American people. That seems to be the best option there. Dave, we got to let you go. The calls are starting to really back up here. And I got to take a couple more calls. So, Dave, aloha. Thanks a lot. We're going to go to Russ. Russ, aloha. I understand you're in Minnesota. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Is Russ there? Okay. Russ just dropped the phone. Russ, if you're listening to me, please call back. I promise not to leave you on the phone. It's a toll-free line anyway. And, please call back in. All right. We're going to go to Mo in Oregon. Mo, aloha. Welcome to the show.
Aloha, Mr. Mike. How are you, sir, today?
I am fine. What can we do for you?
Okay, yeah. Regarding the economic meltdown of United States, which is designed, it was done by design. I mean, it doesn't matter. Taxpayer money supposed to go for infrastructure of this beautiful land of USA. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't want any more bridges come down like what happened 4 or 5 months ago in Minnesota, I believe. The bridge came down and so many people died. I mean, they take this money and put it for that, and it's not enough. The economic is crashed. Let it crash. Let it be go down, and let from the its own ashes, we are going to make a new system up again, a brand new system up, which is going to be the government of people, by the people, for the people, not government of corporations, for the corporations, for benefit of corporations.
I absolutely agree with you. I do think that's the ultimate outcome of the crisis. And my goal is to make it as painless as possible for the transition, that it goes through smoothly. Again, going back to the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was relatively little bloodshed in that transition. Romania was a little bit worse. We could be heading in that direction as well. Only time will solve that mystery. Mo, I got to let you go. We finally got Russ back on the phone here. We're having some problems with our telephone system. I know what it is. They forgot to feed the mutant hamster in the mixer panel, and that's why the phone lines are dropping. So, Russ, aloha. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Oofta from Minnesota. How are you?
I am fine. And, keep that in a foreign language, because if you translate that to English, they're going to pull the license from this here radio station.
Okay, well, it really doesn't mean anything bad. Anyway, great topic. I've been following this as closely as I can. I'm a 50-year-old guy. Plan to work till I'm about 70 because I don't expect to get anything from Social Security. I got about $200,000 invested in between 401k and IRAs, okay? And, yeah, I'm concerned that I'm going to lose it, but I'm more of the mentality that I want people to pay for the mess that we're in right now, and I want them to pay dearly. No, I don't advocate violence like you just said. But how do we drill down to who really is at fault here? I'm kind of getting the swing from your radio show that you're of the liberal side, the Democratic side. You know, one of the
I'm kind of a centrist.
Okay.
Russ, we need you to hold here for a second. We've got a commercial break, but we're going to come back and do the last segment of the show with you. Okay?
Here, if I don't
so
get
we'll,
lost again.
We'll get the hamster fed. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Radio. Fear and hate will rule them, said the demon to his robe. In shackles we terror they'll be shown. As mindless slaves they will not think, blind eyes they will not see. They'll jail themselves and call the bars Homeland Security.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of today's show. It's been a barn burner, and we have got Russ on the phone from Minnesota. And Russ, to answer the question you were asking before we went to the break, I'm sort of a hereditary Republican. My grandfather used to get drunk with Dick Nixon, but I consider myself a paleocon in that I believe in the original core principles of conservatism, which is small, limited government and fiscal responsibility, which we don't have. The neocon trend is something completely different.
I'm with you all the way. I'm just listening to you. This is my first time. You sound like you've got a handle on the issues, and I don't claim to be an expert. I'm a talk radio junkie, a lot of Rush Limbaugh, and you haven't mentioned Chris Dodd or Barney Frank at all in the time I've listened to you, and that's all that Rush Limbaugh is harping on. So correct me, is he wrong, or are you wrong?
Well, I'm not on the same medication that he's on.
All right, okay. Well,
I'm drinking coffee.
I think
see the coffee, it's in the webcam.
I think there is some credibility to Rush Limbaugh, and if he's got some, you know, some complaints about Dodd and Frank on this issue, you know, let's explore them and let's discuss it. You know, are they culprits? Obviously, it's those two guys can't create the whole mess themselves. There's other people involved, and I do agree with you that you have, you know, that there's a lot of very wealthy congressmen, particularly senators, and these guys are going to protect themselves first. That's called human nature. You know, and I think, you know, you can put a lot of them into one room and say, yeah, guilty, guilty, guilty. But, God darn it, I just wish some heads would roll over this whole thing. So I'll let you speak. You're the host.
Well, you know, I think it's a what you're feeling is certainly a very common sentiment I'm getting in the emails and phone calls for this show. And as I mentioned earlier, just walking through the shopping mall, I'm hearing people saying, you know, stoning is eco-friendly. So I think the feeling is definitely there. It's time for the tar and feathers and a tall tree and a very short rope. And we may get there yet. But the bottom line is, the human nature is very self-serving. The founding fathers realized that, and they tried to set up a government that would place more restraints on the government itself than on the people. And that was kind of what got us to the position of being such a wonderfully powerful country. And then somehow over time, probably because of laziness on the part of the people and propagandizing by the corporate media, we got to a situation where now all the restraint and controls are on the people and the taxpayers, and government is running amok and has all the freedom to do what they want. And the one advantage to Congress is they can spread the blame around, so there's no one person you can direct the anger to. But, you know, it all gets back to President Bush, because if he had wanted to stop this nonsense, they could have. We know from the White House press spokesman they were working on this bailout plan document months ago. They knew this was on the horizon. They knew it was coming. They did nothing to stop it because too much money was being made too quickly, you know, to call a halt to it all. And they just wanted to run it up to the edge and then pull back, but they waited too long, and now we're heading over the edge of the cliff.
All right. Now, can you address the fact that yesterday on the news I heard that it is the it's the president and basically the Democrat Party that want to go forward with the bailout as written, but it's the conservative Republicans that are putting a halt to it and saying, no, we've got to have some things in place, number one, that will stop this from happening again, and number two, that will hold those responsible accountable. I agree with the conservative Republicans, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do. And the other part of the conservative Republican plan is they want to view the money as a loan to Wall Street to be eventually paid back by Wall Street, as opposed
to
the Paulson plan. Yeah, amen to that. As opposed to the Paulson plan, which simply dumps the cost on the taxpayers and the taxpayers' children and grandchildren and great-great-great-grandchildren to be paid in perpetuity down the road. And, you know, we're already in a situation where the government debt is so great that all the income tax we're all paying doesn't even meet the interest payments at this point.
Like I said earlier in my comments, I don't expect to get Social Security. Matter of fact, if I could pull out of Social Security right now, they could have everything that I've ever paid in from the time I was working at age 16. I said I'm age 50 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if from this point forward I could keep all my money, I know I could invest it better than the government can invest it. They could keep everything that I've paid up to age 50, and I get to keep the rest from here on in, pay no more into Social Security. I'd be I'd be heads and tails better than what I'm going to be when I turn 70 and retire.
Well, I hate to be the one to break the news to you, but all that money you put into Social Security is already gone because starting my radio show, let me finish a thought here. Starting with the Clinton administration, the administration has been borrowing, quote-unquote, money from the Social Security Trust Fund in order to balance the federal budget. That's where Clinton's budget surplus came from. They took the cash buildup for the baby boomer retirements, and they transferred it to the general ledger, and they spent it as general ledger funds and said, look how wonderful we're managing the economy. We've got a budget surplus. But what's left in the Social Security Trust Fund is a bunch of government IOUs, which means somewhere down the road, somebody gets taxed to replace that money that the Clinton administration and subsequently the Bush administration took out of there in order to spend on wars and whatever else they were spending it on. Social Security is broke. It's full of IOUs. And now, right now, the baby boomers are beginning to retire. These are the people who needed that cash set aside that we put in there with higher Social Security taxes. And that money is gone. So one of two things is going to happen. They're not going to get the benefits they've worked their entire lives to get, as you said yourself. Or two, somebody gets taxed to replace those benefits. And right now we're in a situation where the American people can't get taxed anymore. It's not even a case of whether we're willing or not willing. We don't have it because all of our little high-paying jobs are now in other countries.
Yeah, and boy, you're right on there.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we are right now.
Okay, well, thank you for your insight. I really enjoy your show. Hope I can talk to you and listen to you again.
Well, I'm sure that you can, and please share our show with all of your other talk show junkies.
All right. And I hope my friends in Minnesota listening are hearing this because House District Number 6, we have a conservative Republican running against a person who claims to be a centrist, but I know he'd fall right in line with all those other Democrats. That's Michelle Bachmann versus Elwin Tinklenberg. Michelle has to win because we've got to keep that conservative mentality in there. Thank you.
Well, email me her contact information. We'll get her on the show as a guest.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I will do that. Thank you.
All right. Have a good day. That was Russ. Finally got him through after all the telephone problems and angered hamsters in the mixer board there. So anyway, a couple of other news items. We're almost to the end of the show here. My goodness, how time flies when you're having such fun. The U.S. European Command has now deployed to Israel a high-powered X-band radar and the supporting people and equipment needed for coordinated defense against Iranian missile attack, marking the first permanent U.S. military presence on Israeli soil. Now, first of all, a message to the Israelis. That is an American military facility. Please look at the flag. It's not Egyptian. It's not an Egyptian horse ranch. Please don't shoot it up like you did the USS Liberty. Second of all, and this is to the U.S. government, what a wonderfully generous and expensive thing to do for Israel at a time when Americans are losing their homes and their jobs and their cars and their businesses. I am sorry, okay? Israel is going to have to learn how to grow up and take care of itself. They've got nuclear weapons, okay? They really don't need the U.S. to be standing guard over them like an enraged rabid pit bull to ward off everybody else around them. Nobody's going to attack Israel because Israel has nuclear weapons. The United States should not be sending all of this expensive equipment to anywhere in the rest of the world, whether it's Israel or not, because a country that has women and children sleeping in alleys and eating out of trash dumpsters is not a nation with the money to give to foreign governments. That is really the bottom line. I am very fortunate. I live here in Hawaii. But right now, we've got a huge homeless problem here. Billy Joel wrote the song Another Day in Paradise. Was it Billy Joel? I'm blanking on it. The song Another Day in Paradise. It's a wonderful song. It applies to right here. We're a paradise. We're in the tropics. We've got all this wonderful. We've got a huge homeless population. The local government just passed a law where they're issuing citations. They're starting to harass the homeless people. Where are they going to go? We live on an island. When we've got homeless people here, we should be spending our money here in the United States, not sending it to other countries, not sending our jobs to other countries. We're so out of sync here. All right, that's the end of our show. Tune in Monday, 5 p.m. Central Time. channels 1 and 3 GCN Live. Until then, Aloha America.